Thank you, Dr. Shirabi. It's an honor to be in the same room with you, even more so to be introduced by you, even more so to be the frame of reference for nice words from you. As I think all of us in this room would acknowledge, we're in a university from which there's no possible graduation. This is my 39th year of trying to understand it and enhance my knowledge, information, and insight. And it all started with Dr. Shirabi. Even now on the best of days, I feel quite happy if I can accomplish an incomplete. So focusing on this particular issue requires a degree of sincere humility. And so much of it turns on what we know, what we don't know, and what we think we know, but in fact we do not know. We are a country of 280 million people, and yet if one were to count the totality of Americans of non-Arab ancestry, non-Muslim Americans, who can hold their own in a conversation for more than a half an hour with regard to insight and analysis and knowledge, first-hand empirical educational experience on the ground. And rounding the numbers up to their highest, we would have something like 12 Americans. Out of 280 million people, this is an awesome, embarrassing, profound statistic with its own implications for our needs, our concerns, our policies, our objectives, our relations. With regard to Saudi Arabia, it's particularly pronounced. There would be no more than 5 Americans who went to work this morning, focusing on the kingdom's domestic and regional dynamics and the dynamics of the special Saudi Arabian-American relationship. And consider that in contrast to the other side of the ledger. There are a minimum of 200,000 Saudi Arabians who have stood, lived, and worked, and studied, and been in our shoes, souls, and situations to try to understand us from the inside out. Some put the figure closer to 300,000. If we just take the minimum uncontroversial figure, this would mean that on a scale of knowledge being 100% between the two, there are 200,000 times more Saudi Arabians who know us firsthand, intimately, through a relationship of trust and confidence. Then there are Americans who know Saudi Arabia firsthand through a relationship and an evolution of trust and confidence, of studying and living in American cities, large and small, universities, prestigious and marginal, and everything in between. That in itself is a structured formula for wreckage, for damage. It is part and parcel of the reason for massive, pervasive misunderstanding and being a superpower related to super mistakes. In terms of this relationship, on the ignorance scale, one can teach an entire course of misunderstandings, miscalculations, misperceptions, and stereotypes, many of them negative and defaming. That extrapolated paint a picture of the entire country, as people, as culture, as backward, as dirty, as unstable, as undeserving or worthy of a close and multifaceted and mutually beneficial and reciprocally respectful relationship with the United States of America. There is also the aspect of the arrogance that feeds on this ignorance, with many Americans, tens of thousands, if not millions of Americans, thinking of Saudi Arabia as an oil well, not a country, thinking of the kingdom as being a mountain of money, not people with their own beliefs, practices, values, institutions, needs, concerns, and interest, like many that we have. There are those as well who see it as an object to be influenced, manipulated, dominated, controlled, persuaded, compelled, or ignored, versus a country that is also an actor that must be taken into consideration on its own account, that has an outsized role in regional and world affairs, as witnessed by its being one of the two or three most countries, some would say the most important country, important amongst the 22 Arab polities, and being an outsized single most important country and polity and society amongst the 57 Islamic countries. Indeed, in terms of Mecca and Medina alone, and the Hajj, it is the epicenter of prayer and pilgrimage, of faith and spiritual devotion, for fully one-fifth and aiming towards one-quarter of all of humanity. The American relationship with the kingdom is now fraught with peril, controversy, whether crisis perhaps is too soon or premature to say, but it certainly is heading in that direction. At the core of the relationship, the energy dynamic and the regional defense component, media postulating and punditing and pomposity and pontification to the contrary notwithstanding, there is gain on both sides, in large measure because we're the world's single largest consumer of this finite depletable commodity, the single largest importer of it, the single largest waster of it, and the single loudest crybaby with regard to terms of trade and investment and technology cooperation and the establishment of joint commercial ventures, and how we gain in terms of investment in the United States with regard to enhancing per unit costs, the augmentation of tax revenues, jobs, with regard to the foreign economic assistance that the kingdom, together with Kuwait and also with Abu Dhabi, put to shame almost most other polities on the world, on the face of this earth, with regard to a percentage of their wealth that they share with the less fortunate, with regard to a percentage of per capita income for which of the top 17 wealthiest countries in the world, the United States is at the bottom in terms of charity and generosity and humanitarian and other economic and developmental assistance to the world's less fortunate. We're talking about a country that plays a major role, a central role, in the ongoing relationship to the American dollar in terms of its utility, its respectability, its acceptability, and its linkage to the ongoing preeminence of the American financial system worldwide. We're talking about a country that has taken as much heat and pressure in recent days as perhaps arguably any other for its standing by the United States and being steadfast on the issue of Palestine, on the issue of the Intifada, on the issue of Jerusalem, on the issue of the Palestinians' lack of freedom, their oppression, their absence of civil and human rights, and have stood by the United States, gone out on a limb, gone out on a twig at the end of a limb, to do the right thing in the right way at the right time for the right reasons on the right issues. And it is alone amongst the countries in the Arabian Peninsula and the Gulf that can and has withstood the anger of its people for its leaders having done so. We are the ones who are weak and wavering and withdrawing. We are the ones who are shown to be bereft of moral resolve, of staying power. We're the ones who are seen to be the fair weather friend. We're the one that is talking seriously about cutting and running. We're the one who looks perhaps the opposite of those who live in the land of the free, in the home of the brave. And when tough times get going between and amongst friends, this is when the tough remain fast. And we've had a solid friendship and relationship, a partnership of mutual benefit for more than 60 years that is now being put to the test, less within our decision-making establishment, though there too, than in the private sector, of the media, and to a degree amongst some elements of Congress, and to a growing and intensive and disproportionate extent with regard to influence among public policy research institutes or think tanks. This aspect, coupled to the ignorance and the arrogance, would fault Saudi Arabia for not being a rubber stamp, for not being an echo of half-baked policies, analyses, assessments, estimates, and recommendations in the nation's capital with regard to invading one of its neighbors, with regarding to allowing Uncle Sam and Aunt Samantha to use its bases to attack Iraq, and being flawed or held flawed and faulted for so doing when there's not a single other country among the 200 on this planet that sees it significantly differently. That we would expect Saudi Arabia to play such a role that is not in its interest would be only metaphorically lacking an analogy were we to be beat up on by the French because we would not allow our American bases to be used for France to attack Canada, or that we would not allow our bases for Great Britain to use to attack Mexico. In this particular aspect, the call for unilaterally withdrawing our forces from the region is fraught with its own kinds of implications and ramifications, not just for the bilateral relationship, but for the relationship between ourselves and other actors, forces, and factors in the region, and with global implications on top of everything else. There are those who would say because the presence of American forces in the kingdom serves as a lightning rod for political disaffection and stokes radicalism and militancy and extremism, that we should read the handwriting on the wall and cut our losses and move elsewhere, perhaps to Qatar. Or as one person yesterday said, we can go to Indonesia. There are plenty of Muslims there, and they would not find such a presence destabilizing. Ponder the following were we to do this unilaterally, antagonistically, to withdraw. We're, to be factual here, talking only about one aspect of the forces in the kingdom. We're not talking about the U.S. military training mission, which has been there since 1951, which advises, trains, does maneuvers, exercises, and talks about strategic and tactical doctrine with the regular Saudi Arabian Navy, Army, and Air Forces. Neither are we talking about the OPM Sang, the advisory mission to the Saudi Arabian National Guard, the Haras al Watani, which is still commanded by Prince Abdullah, and which has around $500 million in annual contractual good services and training under that. We're talking about what, at the end of the liberation of Kuwait and the reversal of Iraq's aggression, were week in and week out around 7,800 soldiers, which were spread between Dhahran, Riyadh, and particularly Riyadh, but now overwhelmingly in an area south of Riyadh at Prince Sultan Air Base, which was built in the aftermath of the tragedy at Khobar Towers in June of 1996, and which had a commingling of monies, American and Saudi Arabian, there in terms of the barracks, the billets, the more or less junior college campus network there that was paid for all by Saudi Arabia. The combined Air Operations Center, which is a state-of-the-art facility and has nothing remotely comparable to it elsewhere in the region, was paid for by the United States. Were we to withdraw further from the just under 5,000 that we have now, ponder the following. As it is now, we, together with the Saudi Arabians, are mounting by the hour surveillance reconnaissance campaign over southern Iraq, in which the game plan is to prevent a massacre or a suppression, decimation of the southern Iraqis, the overwhelming majority of whom are Shia, by the way. When people talk about Wahhabi or Saudi Arabian fanaticism and extremism and its bigotry and bias and almost racist overtones towards non-Wahhabi, non-Sunnis, ponder who is benefiting from that. The overwhelming majority are Shia. And ponder in the rearview mirror the same thing when Saudi Arabia with Yemen's government is also Shia, worked together during the 1960s till the end of the civil war in Yemen in support of who, at the end of the day, were Shia Muslims with regard to the image or the prism or the keyhole through which Americans look at some aspects of the kingdom. By being able to fly and surveil and gather intelligence all the way up to a 32nd parallel, two further parallels, gives a greater degree of geostrategic and defensive depth than could otherwise be accomplished in any of the other GCC countries, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, the UAE, and Oman. And if one just looks at it from an American perspective, there are tens of thousands of Americans who live and work in this particular region. Many Americans ask these other Americans, when are you coming home? And the answer for thousands of them is, I am home. This is where I live. This is where my family is. In terms of the eastern province of Saudi Arabia alone, there are more Americans who go to work there this morning, yesterday, tomorrow, in a concentrated way than any other place on this planet. Those Americans' needs, their emotions, their fears, their apprehensions, their aspirations for their family and for their children, their dependents, and for the bilateral relationship are at stake in terms of a precipitous decision to do away with this protective umbrella. For those that speak about the peace process, well, there's no peace process at best. It's a diplomatic process or a rhetorical process. But when there was a harakah, when there was a momentum, when there were people dreaming their dreams and thinking that their dreams were not based in naivete, from Madrid on through Oslo and the like, in the multi-track process, how many know that Saudi Arabia was behind the GCC countries? Every single of their meetings with the Israelis in Bahrain, in Qatar, and Oman, hung out on the limb to dry for doing this in the face of perceived betrayal and perfidy on the part of the United States strategic alliance with the Israelis, and taking a beating from Baghdad and a thump from Tehran for their so doing, but emboldened to play a leading role despite the difficulties, because one could sense an elemental aspect of justice over the horizon, of finality, and a component of fairness in what has been one of the greatest tragedies to ever befall or be visited upon the people of that region. Take the United States defense security component out of that formula, and then ask yourself, how likely is it to have a revived robustness to any peace process trying to settle the Israeli-Palestinian, Israeli-Syrian components of this project here. With regard to any of the other places to which we would relocate, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, UAE, Oman, none of them, not one, would provide the extent or the geostrategic depth or the technology and the state-of-the-art equipment or the assistance in kind, let alone the larger economic issues at stake. And yet much of this is being driven, if not almost all of it is being driven by ourselves, hence the ignorance, hence the arrogance. To talk in terms of doing this unilaterally, antagonistically, provocatively, precipitously, while the issues of Iraq are still on the table, the issues of Iran are still on the table, the issues of the Intifada are still on the table, could only be welcomed by Baker's half dozen of Iran, Iraq, Israel, possibly India, and the followers of Osama bin Laden. So think in terms of the atmospheric receptivity and how lacking in propition is the moment in terms of the message being sent to a country from which the United States has derived such enormous, inordinate benefits over time. With regard to the think tank public policy research institutes, components of it, we would not be seen as the sterling shining example of the use of money. We talk about dollarocracy or the corrupting role of money in seduction and addiction to money in our political system. Many can now see another face of it, where individuals with their own ideologically rigid, bordering on extremist views of what our relationship would be, should be, must be, could be, with the 22 Arab countries and the 57 Islamic countries, is becoming ascendant, if not in the mainstream, in the center, then certainly at the periphery, pointed towards the center. We don't need to name the think tanks in this city whose individuals work all day long pushing the agenda that arguably could be that of a country other than our own, or scholars and specialists and research fellows who sit where they are because some corporate private individual with her or his own interest has provided the subsidy, made the contribution. And we talk as much as we can about responsibility, transparency, and accountability, but in this regard, given what's at stake on matters pertaining to right and wrong, and war and peace, and justice and injustice, we see the absence of responsibility, the absence of accountability. To take the United States out of this relationship at its strategic most necessary point, when we need a country like Saudi Arabia more than we have ever needed it in our history in the Arab and Islamic worlds, without first having reconciled, removed, or resolved the issues of Israel-Palestine, Israel-Syria, Iraq, and Iran, would be the height of recklessness, irresponsibility, and danger. Withdraw them, remove them afterwards, not before, lest one wants to rue the day. I will stop on this note because we're at 28 minutes after, and leave time for debate, discussion, and questions. I have no ego investment or involvement in terms of people taking me on. I welcome it. I will learn from you as much, if not more, than you may have learned from me. Thank you.